Hey, it's Francis Lamb, host of The Splendid Table. Every week on our show, we talk about food and cooking and the meanings of food and cooking. We talk with the most interesting people in food about their techniques, their culture, and everything in between. Whether it's about how fried chicken took over the world or how Instagram changes the way people are actually eating. It's a food show where everyone is welcome. Come join us. You can listen to The Splendid Table wherever you get your podcasts.
You're listening to Heritage Radio Network. HRN is food radio supported by you. Learn more at heritageradionetwork.org.
You're listening to Heritage Radio Network. HRN is food radio supported by you. Learn more at heritageradionetwork.org.
Hello, listeners. It's great to be back for another fall season of Cutting the Curd. Thank you for joining us for this episode. This is Jessica, and I hope you had a great summer. One of the things I did this summer was attend the Fancy Food Show, where I met two of our three guests today. And after chatting with them for a few minutes, I asked if they would come on and share their story with us. Today, we are joined by Paul Farishedian of Erivan Yogurt, and Emiliano and Lori Tatar of Marion Park Cheese. They are here to talk about Lovenut and their collaboration to produce their own, which they call Lovenut. The name makes sense because both of these companies are in the Philadelphia area, that city of brotherly love. And this really is a story about a labor of love and a love for a cheese and collaboration. Paul, Emmy, and Lori, welcome to Cutting the Curd.
Thanks, Jessica.
Thank you so much.
Glad to be here.
So I'm so excited to have three guests on. We're kicking off the new fall season with a high bar here. So Emmy, can we start with you? Can you set the stage for us and tell us, before we go back in time, what is Lovenut and what is Lovenut?
Yeah, so Lovenut is a strained yogurt product. Basically what that means is you start with yogurt and then you drain out the whey through by gravity, typically with no pressure. After a while, removing the whey produces a tangy, thicker and smoother version of the yogurt. You then take that product and you add the right amount of salt, and that is basically it. You produce what is known throughout large regions in the world as Lovenut. You can find this product being ubiquitously used in the Middle East, the Balkans, and other countries. It's typically eaten as a dip or a spread, or as a base or additive for rice.
Oh,
so that's the story. And then Lovenut is our American version of this product. You know, what makes our product special and unique is that we use local milk from Bucks County, which is a suburban area of Philadelphia. We get that milk from one family farm. And Paul then makes his Erivan yogurt, which is a great base for Lovenut because it is tangy and creamy, and it has, it's a little more diluted, it has more whey in it. And then Paul, who manufactures the product, will drain it himself in his facility and pack it there.
So you recently won a great taste award as well for Lovenut.
We did. That was a huge honor.
Congratulations.
Thank you. So yeah, so we got one star.
Yeah, now you're going to have the little Great Taste Award symbol on your Lovenut.
Yeah, we started slapping those stickers on a few weeks ago.
So what was missing from Lovenut that you could find already on the market that inspired you to do this yourself?
Yeah, so So I grew up part of my life in the Middle East, in Israel. Specifically, I grew up in northern Israel, where there were people from Lebanon who used to come and work in Israel. And there's also another population of Druze folks who that's sort of like an offshoot of Islam, different religion than Islam, but they live within Israel, specifically in northern Israel. And both those populations make and use labneh in their cuisine. So I was exposed to it from an early age. And to me, it was something that you put out on your table, your Middle Eastern table, just like hummus. It's you see it everywhere. It wasn't really anything you thought twice about. But then when I moved to the United States, it was actually really hard to find this product made in the same way that they make it over there. What I find here is that what you find on the shelves are usually mass-produced versions, which simulate labneh, but don't really replicate the product that I was used to. It doesn't have the right tang. It doesn't have the right texture. And also it loses, the milk that's used, I think is probably not as high quality. So you lose a lot of those herbal grassy notes that you would get from grass fed cows. And so it was really kind of a one dimensional product and I really missed it. I thought we could do something better. And when I discovered Paul's yogurt, I thought this is the perfect yogurt to make labneh. And turns out it makes amazing labneh.
So before we started today, we had a conversation. Like, I love to talk with people before the interview. And you said without the yogurt, there would be no labneh. So Paul, I'm going to throw this over to you. You have been making Armenian style yogurt at Erevan 50 years. Is that how long?
Since 1970.
Since 1970. Okay. Well, that's 53 years. Guess how
long is that? I will add that without Emmy and Lori, there would be no love now. Just the way it is. It's a perfect match. It really is.
I love that. So can you tell us about your company and your history making this particular yogurt that got you to this point that caught Emmy and Lori's attention?
Well, sure. Our yogurt began, as I said, in 1970 in our kitchen, in my mother's kitchen. You know, I was very young. I remember coloring in labels because this was we were selling in the health food industry, and it was really a very small industry 50 years ago, as you can imagine. My mother got involved, got interested in health foods, and she would send my father to a health food store, probably the only one in the area, way before Whole Foods, you know. Mm-hmm. And he would stop by and pick up a few items on the way home from work. And he looked over at there was a yogurt on the shelf in the store. And my father said, "Oh, my wife makes that. I'm not going to buy that. My wife makes it already." And the owner of the store said, "Have her make it for me. I will sell it. This company's going out of business. We have a spot for you." So my mother just started making yogurt, one store, two, three, 10, and then distributors started seeing it. And 50 years later, fast forward 50 years, we're in Whole Foods, we're in a very wide variety of stores, but interestingly, not typically like the cheese shops and the kind of places where our labneh is found. So they're really different customers. My wife made labneh in our kitchen just for personal use. It's a very traditional Armenian dish, ingredient, just a staple. It's a staple, as Emmy said. And so really wasn't on my radar to pivot to labneh. Mm-hmm. As even though occasionally I would get asked about it. I would get asked about it. But it wasn't until this Jewish Argentinian pediatrician called me, and he had me from that moment. Completely drawn to him. And I grew up in a very Jewish neighborhood, so I even had an honorary bar mitzvah in my friend's driveway. So I felt very connected to Emmy and then Lori. So
we both share feelings of guilt.
Yes.
Oh my gosh. So I do want to just ask you specifically about Armenian yogurt. It's called Madzun.
That's the Armenian word. Madzun is yogurt. It's just a translation.
Right. So like Shev, we tend to, you know, we refer to everything, you know, fresh goat milk, cheese is Shev, but Madzun being being the name for yogurt in Armenia, what is to you the thing that makes it distinct from other yogurt on the market?
Well, what my mother realized was when she started it was that there was there's the very commercial yogurt, and then we didn't want to just make a traditional kind of basic commercial yogurt. She wanted to use a probiotic, Acidophilus only. So it created a very tangy yogurt, and it had a very specific, you know, specific interest in it. Some people would scrunch up their nose and couldn't handle it. And others were like, wow, where has this been all my life? Mm. So we found a niche market with the very, very tangy type of yogurt. And it is, we've got loyal, great, loyal, longtime customers. 50 years. It's not often you have 50-year product. And here I am, you know, I'm in my 60s and I'm, you know, starting to think about retirement, training my daughter to take over. And probably the last thing I really was looking for was a big major pivot just before I retired.
Right.
But I was swept up in all the excitement, and I'm certainly glad I was.
So the way you two came together, this makes me laugh every time I think about it since you first told me. Emmy, you called them because Paul's company had the word dairy in it?
Yeah, so this was about, I guess, 6 years ago, Paul. Yeah, something like 6 or 7 years ago. So at that point, I was starting a very small business making H cheeses. I was trying to make American versions of British territorial cheeses, specifically Caerphilly's. And what I needed was, as an urban cheesemaker, I needed a milk source. And I basically Googled what's around me in terms of people with cows. And one of the names that came up because of the word, because his company is Erevan Dairy, it came up as a hit on Google. And so I called him and I said, I asked him, hey, do you have milk? Do you have animals? And he said, no, we're a yogurt manufacturer. And I said, oh, well, I'm sorry to bother you. Thank you so much. And then very kindly, Paul said, wait, what are you trying to do? And we got into this whole conversation, and I told him I'm looking for a milk source. And he said, well, let me think about it. And then we got in touch later that week, I think. And he said, you know what? I go to a farm and get milk to make my yogurt. And it's really not a problem for me to get some extra and sell it to you. And that's how we connected.
That's wild. That's wonderful. Now, Lori, did you always share this passion for cheesemaking that Emmy had? And how did you approach this whole new part of your life? Because you guys have other careers.
Yes.
This is not your main gig.
No. So the short answer to your question is definitely no. When Emmy approached me when we had our second child, who was just a baby, and said, I think I want to start a business selling the aged cheese that I've been making as a hobby. They're there definitely was some very serious conversations and me saying, I think you're out of your mind and we're not doing this. And he pretty much, when he was doing the age cheeses, did it mostly on his own. And I was, you know, raising our two young kids, which he definitely participated in too. I don't want you to get you wrong, but, he did most of the cheese stuff on his own. And then more recently, after COVID and as the kids were getting bigger, they started to get more involved. And when we were doing the age cheeses, he would have them putting labels on things and coming with him on deliveries. And now really, I would say this is a family affair. As you mentioned before, we're both actually pediatricians. And so I'm still practicing part-time. And then I work on the side doing the cheese business stuff. It's really been fun, honestly. I love to cook, and to be involved in kind of the restaurant world and meeting people and going into restaurants and trying to help satisfy their needs has really been very fun for me, and a change of pace from my daily job. And I love working with Paul and calling him and saying, these are our orders for the week, and having him discuss back with me all the, the ups and downs of everything. It's really been just a very, very positive aspect in our lives.
So how has the reception been? Because Labneh, I know there are some very high profile restaurants in Philadelphia that, are destinations for Israeli and Middle Eastern and Eastern European cooking. Have you found that's primarily the type of account that you're selling to, or have you been able to widen the field? Like, are you getting a reception from across the city, or are you finding that right now it's really just those who already know what Labneh is?
The great luck of early on in Labneh production, in the beginning of this project, of being able to sell our Labneh to Zahav Restaurant, which I think a lot of people know. New Yorkers will be familiar with the restaurant from the same group, Laser Wolf in Brooklyn. Zahav is considered one of the best. I know Middle Eastern is not the best culinary description of it, but Middle Eastern, Israeli, Palestinian restaurants in the country. And, they've won multiple James Beard awards and been recognized many times. The chef and owner is Mike Solomonov. He's been, celebrated in that field of cooking, and we were lucky enough, I sent him a message on Instagram, and he's just incredibly kind and responded right away and said, yeah, bring it over, we'll try it. And he was into it, and we started selling there. And that really gave us a platform to sell to others. It really legitimized the product to be accepted by them. So, in the beginning, I would say it was slow. We went to different specialty shops and different restaurants, and they slowly started to get more and more customers. And now it's moving. Paul also got us to a restaurant called Green Zone in Washington, D.C. They use a ton of our Labneh. We're expanding, hopefully soon entering the New York market. We're talking right now to some distributors there. We have grown quite a bit since we started.
And just to tack on to what Emmy said, to just add on to your question, maybe to start off, we were a little bit in more Middle Eastern restaurants, but I really think that we've broadened. And, sometimes we are lucky enough to see what chefs have done with the Labneh. And really, we've seen everything from French restaurants using it to make desserts. And we've seen people use it in like really many, many different capacities, not just in Middle Eastern restaurants. And on the retail side, were really just in, like, you know, gourmet grocery stores and cheese shops. I would say that the Middle Eastern market for that is a very small percentage of what we're doing in the retail side of the business. It's really just kind of in places that carry high-end products.
I was thinking about what Paul said earlier about the yogurt and, you know, the palate for a distinctively different tasting yogurt. I feel like fresh cheeses and cheese that you would consume every day in some way is really starting to have a moment in this country, and that people are starting to be able to tell the difference, or appreciate, I should say, the subtle differences between these different styles of yogurt from different traditions. Do you get a sense of that? I feel like, if, you know, maybe 20 years ago, 15 years ago, yogurt was yogurt. And then, of course, we had the Greek yogurt explosion. But, you know, we started to see Skyr on the market. And we started to see, you know, Fromage Blanc has kind of popped in and out. But Quark started to find a place on the shelf. Are you seeing that as well?
Well, there's so many yogurts. It's always a battle for shelf space. So yes, it's constantly churning with new products, Bulgarian yogurts, and it just goes on and on. So, you know, we hold tightly to our loyal following. We always want to expand that into other areas. And that just seems to be the pattern. It's, you have your loyal following, and you try to introduce the product to new people to keep people interested.
Yeah, no, I'm glad you brought that up, Jessica, because that has been somewhat of a challenge for us. But to answer your question, yes, I do think that there is a lot more variety on the shelf for fresh cheeses than you saw maybe 10, 20 years ago. I totally agree with you. And, you know, for us, so, you know, if you go to the Middle East or Balkan countries, you'll see labneh. It's really just another staple in their fridge. But it's relatively unknown in the US. And so that has been sort of an interesting challenge for us, is how to introduce a product that's essentially new to the country. It's not new to the folks who come from those regions or from those cultures, but for a lot of Americans, they don't know exactly what to do with labneh. So, you know, we did add some text on the box, giving suggestions, and, you know, we use shelf talkers, we connect with people, we talk to the chefs, give them ideas. You know, for a place like Zahav, we don't need to explain anything. They know exactly what to do with it. But in other restaurants, like Lori said, non-Middle Eastern restaurants that have adopted it, there's an education piece for sure. This is something different for the US market. And I guess if, you know, in the yogurt, soft cheese market, which is, you know, this is a product that tastes very yogurty, but is tangier and is savory. So I think when Americans think of yogurt, they tend to think of it as either plain or with some kind of sweet additive, right?
Mm-hmm.
So this is a sort of a brand new category.
And on that, I'm going to say we're going to pause for a word from one of our great sponsors, and we'll be right back at Cutting the Curd.
This episode is supported by HRN business members selected by Will Studd. Will Studd is the host of Cheese Slices, a unique documentary series about artisan cheese. Over 62 episodes filmed across 20 countries over 2 decades are a fabulous resource for anyone who loves cheese. Visit willstudd.com, that's willstudd.com, to learn more and to see the hand-selected special range of quality cheeses from Europe. Selected by Will Studd supports HRN's creative, educational reporting and storytelling that drive conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place.
And we're back. We're here talking with 3 wonderful guests from the Philadelphia area. We have Paul Farishedian from Erivan Dairy. They make Erivan yogurt. We have Emiliano and Lori Tatar of Merriam Park Cheese. And together, these three have created Lovne, which is a lavne that is coming out of the city of brotherly love. And it's amazing. This is the second time I've talked to cheesemakers from that area. You used the term urban cheesemaker yourself, Emmy, and that is how Peristead Dairy also describes themselves as urban cheesemakers. So I wanted to, you know, talk a little bit about, you said you were making aged cheese, and how did that start? How did you get interested in cheesemaking as a hobby?
Yeah. And by the way, while we're mentioning Peristead Creamery, I'm just going to put in a plug for their cheeses that are amazing.
Yes.
And it has nothing to do with the fact that you have Perry and I are excellent friends. So, completely unbiased.
Yeah.
But so as you mentioned, I think it was mentioned before, we have, Lori and I have two totally different careers that are, you know, they're medical, they're scientific, they're not focused really on food or any kind of artistic persuasion. But Lori and I both like food and to cook a lot. And, you know, I it's not unusual for professionals to get to seek a hobby. And I one day, I don't remember exactly where, but I read about or saw a YouTube video about home cheese making and got into it as a hobby and became immediately hooked and couldn't stop and wanted to try to make every type of cheese out there and did that for a while. And then received some good feedback about the products from friends and family. And people encouraged me to try to sell it. And so I went through the process with the Department of Agriculture of Pennsylvania to get properly licensed in a small facility and started making our cheeses in small amounts. Was able to sell them through the Bruno Brothers and some other local retailers. And that's kind of how I got into that business. As Lori mentioned, around COVID, I switched jobs to a job that made it harder for me to spend time making the cheeses, and especially time spent on aging and affinage. And so I wanted to pivot. And one thing I had been doing is, so through the relationship with Paul, you know, when I would go get milk, every once in a while, I would sort of trick him into giving me free yogurt.
And, well, you gave me some of your cheese. And
oh, there you go.
What else could I do?
And so he would just give me these cases of yogurt, which is more than we could consume as a family. So I'd often have some leftover. And I started to make lavne at home with it. And I realized that that tanginess that Paul was describing, that's typical for his Manzoon, makes the perfect lavne. That's the perfect substrate. So at some point, you know, I wanted to keep my hand in the dairy world and in that business and the culinary world. So I went to Paul and I said, "What do you think about this?" And you know, it's all history from there.
I love the fact that you are you and Lori are both medical professionals, and so I'm assuming you agree that consuming dairy products, high protein dairy products, can be beneficial. And of course, Paul, you know, gave the throwback to the health food stores of the 70s. My parents used to go to those. I remember. I have very, very fond memories of those places. And now, of course, we see the integration with more of the commercial market, which is great. And so I did want to also talk a little bit about collaboration. And we know in the cheese world, in cheese production, there's always a lot of collaboration, whether it's the traditional methods like and cooperatives such as in Conte production, many of the Swiss cheese productions where you have the farmers delivering their milk to the cheesemakers, and then the cheesemakers are working with the affineurs, and then the affineurs, of course, birth the cheeses out into the world. So this is a very unique collaboration. What makes it work? What do you think have been the keys to your collaborative relationship?
Well, I think the foremost is we really like each other. It's not just business. It's just a joy to work together. And we've really divided up the workload beautifully. It really is. I mean, I know what I have to do. There's lots of conversations in the direction and focus of the business going forward, but we've really divided up the workload in a way that plays to both of our strengths.
Yeah, I 100% echo that, Paul. I mean, there's, and I think Lori mentioned that too, there's real joy in working together. I joked before about the sharing the guilt and all that, but I mean, there's, even though we come from two very distinct backgrounds and cultures, we're actually, I think, very similar in many ways, and we understand each other. And I would add, Paul, that there's a tremendous amount of respect. So I think really what makes it work is it's just good vibes.
If it's okay with both of you, I do want to give a nod to talking about, you know, memory. And both of you shared with me some family history that even though it was in different parts of the world and at different times, similar experiences, who knows how it gets into our DNA. But sounds like there's also some common memory that continues to endure products like Labneh and Madzun. Would you say that's accurate? Maybe it's like why you hit it off, or you just understand each other on a certain, from a certain place. Maybe it's just like unspoken.
Well, the Armenians have a very tragic history, just as the Jews do. So there, that's always like a foundation, I think, whenever I speak to a member of the Jewish community, is I understand, you know, we were, you know, in a massacre. Mm-hmm. The Ottoman Turks were targeting Armenians during that, you know, the 1920 time, and it definitely is sort of a passed down trauma through my grandparents. And it's hard not to connect with people who have, you know, shared trauma like that.
And you're not first generation here, though. Your family came over did they come to Philadelphia specifically, or?
Well, the Armenians, when we had this fleeing, it's a diaspora, because they would go anywhere the boat would take them. Mm-hmm. You know, so my ancestors landed in the Philadelphia area. But there's pockets all around the country, all around the world, of Armenians because of that, of the trauma. Mm-hmm. And the fleeing from persecution and worse.
Right. And Emmy, you were saying that your family, you had spent some time growing up in Israel, but you were born in Argentina?
Yeah, exactly. And I just wanted to say that Paul and I have spoken several times before about our sort of similar history of our people. Mm-hmm. So it's not unspoken. It's definitely something that is bonding and we've discussed. But my story is my family several generations back is from Buenos Aires in Argentina. I was born there. Buenos Aires has the largest Jewish community of South America. So even though it might sound odd to people to hear about South American or Latino Jews, that we exist. Mm-hmm. I was born in 73, a few years after that, 76, there was a military coup, violent takeover, lots of violence and bad stuff. And being Jewish, we were able to flee when I was about 3 years old, and we went to Israel. And so lived there. And then intermittently, then we moved to the U.S. and I went back and forth between those two countries. Those shared sort of immigrant stories and feelings and influences, I think, are a huge part of our product and a huge part of our collaboration.
And Lori, did you have anything you wanted to share of your history here? I didn't get a chance to speak with you before.
That's okay. So mine is a little bit more boring, but I'm also from a Jewish background. I did grow up in Maryland. But my family's also from Eastern Europe immigrated pre-World War II for the most part, mostly to the U.S. I had some family that came in through Canada. But you don't grow up in a Jewish household without people talking about or being exposed to, families that were deeply affected, by the Holocaust and the war. I think that's a part of every Jewish kid growing up in the U.S.
Mm-hmm. And Lavina, do you have a memory of that? Or is that something that Emmy introduced you to?
So honestly, it's something that Emmy introduced me to. I am not a shy eater and I will try pretty much anything. He started making it for us as a family and I loved it. And on our trips to Israel as a family together, I've been 4 times with him. I have fond memories of eating it in many different capacities, whether it's by, a Druze woman who's spreading it on pita at the side of the road, or kind of in a restaurant or at family dinners. We've eaten it many, many times together, and I really do love it.
So what are some of the ways you would recommend to people listening to this podcast episode? What are ways you would recommend they would use Lavina and even also Madzun if they were to pick up some at a store or even try at home? Because we do have a lot of home cheesemakers who listen. What are ways that you enjoy it in your home?
So I'm lucky because I have an endless supply of it, basically. So part of my job is always looking for different ways to use it. Certainly there's the traditional way of eating it, which is just to spread it on a plate and drizzle it with some olive oil and put some za'atar on top, and scoop it with, wedges of pita. But I have used it, as a bed for grilled vegetables. I've substituted it in baking recipes that require yogurt or sour cream. I've put scoops of it into mashed potatoes instead of some of the milk and butter that goes into it. I've used it as a spread on toast with fruit on top of it or with lox on top of it. There's just so many different ways, if you're creative, as to ways that you could use it that are really, truly delicious and very pretty too, honestly.
Yeah.
And also there, one way to think about it is anywhere that you would add sour cream. Anywhere that you would put sour cream, Lavina is a really cool and different substitute. It has a lot more complexity and a different texture and a lot more tang. So especially if you're eating something that's on the fattier side, it really has a nice acidity to cut that.
Yep. You just kind of back off on the salt a little bit and put a scoop of it in, and it's really delicious.
Oh, that's true. That's true. Because that tanginess and also cutting back on the salt, it would add some of those dimensions as well.
Yeah.
Paul,
exactly.
Do you have any suggestions? Or even for Madzun, if I were to pick up some of your yogurt, is that something I would be mostly eating just out of the container with something, or would I also be using it in different preparations?
Well, I'd first want you to try it all by itself and take a picture of your face. I'd like to just include that in my Hall of Fame. But anything, lots of sweets and tangies go well with it. My family loves to sprinkle in some homemade granola on it. It's an endless combination product. Mm-hmm. We use it. There's a lot of madzun used in Armenian cooking as toppings on top of casserole type dishes. It's just a staple. It's an endless staple.
And maple syrup in Paul's
maple syrup is
amazing.
Oh, yeah. There you go. Yeah. I could see that. Definitely. So Paul, you mentioned that your daughter is now working with you.
Yeah. So she's been, she has three very young children, but two of them are off at school and she'll often, like today, she'll bring the youngest and the youngest will go in the back and I give her a nickel a box and she makes boxes in the storage area. And my daughter Cerise is out helping me and we're processing labneh. And she's just learning how to run a business. It's beautiful. It's really the most wonderful gift that Emmy and Lori has given me is this growing relationship with my daughter because she has really a passion for this labneh and is enjoying all the surprises, all the newness of a new product. It's that part of it has been really wonderful. And we joke about a 5-year plan. We had a 5-year plan for me to retire 5 years ago. That's not going to happen. Maybe another fresh reset on that. And maybe it'll be another 5 years. And
sorry, Paul. Sorry, we were to retire.
That's okay. I don't know what I would do with myself. So I would also go back to the labneh. And occasionally, Emmy and Lori will bring a sample of try this with the labneh. And some of them have been absolutely amazing. I don't know if you want me to share all the crazy concoctions, but the harissa honey was just tremendous. That combination with the labneh was, I just don't know how you would even thought to put those two together, but it was great.
This is something you can make at home. You basically add harissa, like a teaspoon to a bunch of honey and mix it. And by itself, it's delicious. But if you add it to labneh, to something that's like tangy and salty, it's, out of this world. It's really, really good.
Oh, that sounds really good.
And then going in the future, we are thinking about different flavors and different versions of this product. We're not quite there yet. We're still in growth mode. And introducing our plain product, but that is to come.
Well, you guys caught my attention and I did try it. And I have to say, yeah, it's not like any of the labneh I've had at the places where I've had it before, like mostly, restaurants. But I have to say it's exciting to see there's new products coming out, new collaborations, and out of Philadelphia too. I think if there's any other lessons to get from this, it's that you can be a cheesemaker anywhere and you can find people to connect with and create new communities. And I think it's interesting too that Yoav at Perry Said is also making a cream cheese. So I think that the fresh, the fresher cheeses and spread styles, yes, there are challenges with making something with short shelf life. But it's really exciting to see all these innovations coming out of places that aren't the normal pastoral places you would associate with cheese making.
Yeah. I mean, Philly has an incredible cheese scene. There's a lot of folks here, that, I'm sure are familiar to a lot of cheese professionals that know, this area but there's a lot of really amazing and innovative dairy producers here. And, it's a funny state, Pennsylvania, because we have these two huge cities, Philadelphia and Pittsburgh. And in between them is all rural, beautiful pastoral country with lots of cows and lots of excellent high quality milk. So it makes sense for us to be in the game. And I just wanted to say
the great thing about labneh is that it's one of those products, one of those foods that's very simple and yet at the same time can be very complex. I think sometimes people think, well, I'll just buy some yogurt and strain it and add salt and I'll have labneh. And they will, and it might be very delicious, but to replicate what it really is supposed to taste like, what people are experiencing around the world, you need great yogurt. So yes, you can definitely use Paul's amazing yogurt. But at the same time, I do want to say that it did take us a long time to perfect our system, and we're still working on it. So the amount of draining, the right temperatures for draining, and the right type of salt, the right salt concentration, just to get it to resemble what we grew up with, actually did take a lot of work. And so I think that that is sort of the beauty of this product, is that it has, and you know, and that's why I think Love is a great name for it, labneh, because it's one of those simple traditional dishes that if you make it with love, it comes out amazing. If you put some attention and some extra work and effort behind it, you're going to get an amazing product. And I think our collaboration has produced something really special and unique. And we hope that people enjoy it as much as we do.
Well, I just want to say thank you so much to Emmy and Lori and Paul for joining us on Cutting the Curd. Thank you for sharing your histories and your passion for your yogurt and your labneh and your collaboration.
Well, thank you so much for having us. We're really grateful for this opportunity. And this was so much fun.
Yes, Jessica, thank you so much. It was such a pleasure meeting with you and speaking with you today. So much fun.
Thank you for listening. Always check us out at Cutting the Curd on your favorite streaming platform. And back episodes are available. You can always visit heritageradionetwork.org. And we look forward to seeing you on Instagram and all of that good stuff. Until next time.
Cutting the Curd is powered by Simplecast. Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. Keep in touch at heritageradionetwork.org/subscribe.
Hey, everybody, I'm Nick Layton.
And I'm Leah Bonema.
And we're the hosts of Were You Raised by Wolves?
Each week, we try to make the world a kinder, nicer place.
Well, that's the idea, at least.
I mean, we try.
Have you ever wondered what to do if you're ghosted?
Or what to do when a friend asks you to borrow money?
Or the proper way to eat Cheetos?
You know, the big questions.
So please find Were You Raised by Wolves wherever you listen.